This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Barack Obama, the communist who started so much of this, he's back. We'll talk about that. Did the Mexican cartels put a bounty on the head of ICE agents? It sure looks like it. Ron Johnson is here. The government's still shut down. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Okay, so now that Barack Obama is back, and we have some clips for you here, clearly this is going to be a thing where he's going to be speaking out more. I think it's important to discuss a couple things before we get to actually what he said. First, Barack Obama specifically. He is the only president, from all my reading, in the history of the United States of America, the only one we've ever had who genuinely hates the country. There have been all kinds of Democrat presidents and Republican presidents, and some of them appear to be real patriots. Some, don't get me wrong, plenty appear to not really care about the country at all, tyrants or morons or whatever. But even if you go back to guys like FDR, Bill Clinton, you know, those guys didn't really genuinely hate the country. May have done some selfish things, some bad things, but they didn't hate the place. Barack Obama did. That's how he was raised. Those were the influences in his life. Now, combine that with the other thing, and it made Barack Obama so damaging. He's good at it. He's really, really good at politics. It's not just that he has that hatred. Lots of communists hate the country. Not many were as trained and capable as Barack Obama was. He was so good at subversively destroying this place from the inside while presenting himself as just the norm, just the normie. I remember his campaign ads running for president. Seemed like a moderate guy. He did, if you were only believing the ads, just seemed like kind of a normal guy, Democrat. Hey, we all get up. He was just really, really good at that kind of deception. Now, set Obama aside a moment. We'll come back to him. There's another thing about communists that you have to understand. It's just the way they think. It's not how you think. I'm glad that. But it's the way they think. The communist believes that every single thing, every institution, large and small, every person, large and small, but every institution should work on behalf of the revolution. Remember, he's religious. His revolution is right before his communist God. It is all that is good. Anything that opposes it is evil. And so when he turns your public library into the spawn of Satan, where they're waving their penis in your daughter's face, or he turns the FBI evil, or but entertainment, and he turns them into weapons of the revolution. He doesn't think he's doing anything wrong. That's how he looks at everything. Everything to be truly good has to work exclusively for the revolution, and everything, every institution should actively oppose all the enemies of the revolution. And when he became president of the United States of America, that's how he operated. And again, part of what killed us so much is he was good at it. He was really good at it. He really shunned a lot of the traditional beltway people. He had some, but the traditional DC bureaucrats, you know, just kind of scummy, selfish people. He ditched a lot of those guys, and he went to where you can really find the most evil, violent, committed communists on the planet, academia, the university system. And he started plucking people out of academia and installing them all over the United States government. For 8 years, he did this. He even purged generals, replaced them with his kind of generals. And at the end of it, what we had, what Donald Trump walked into for his first term, and what really what we still have for the most part, was a federal government that is completely weaponized against the right and views itself as a tool for the revolution. There's tons of these people there. And so when he says things like this, he's not really being hypocritical.
We have blown through, just in the last 6 months, a whole range of not simply assumptions, but rules and laws and practices that were put in place to ensure that nobody's above the law, and that we don't use the federal government to simply reward our friends and punish our enemies. And the same thing's obviously happening in the Justice Department.
Okay. I know you're screaming at the television set. But that's what he did! I mean, look, we've talked about this before on the show. That person ran for office to do what communists always do. Of course, promote the revolution, but reward her friends and punish her enemies. Those are, as we've discussed many times, the only two things a communist does with power, and they're the only two things he's interested in. So, is Barack Obama a hypocrite when he accuses us of doing that? Maybe. To you or me, he is, of course, but we have to understand in his mind, he is not. When he looks at the court, the DOJ, when he looks at the FBI, when he looks at all these things, everything, McDonald's, doesn't matter what it is, everything is just something that should be used, should be working for the revolution. If it's not, it either has to be completely destroyed or infiltrated and taken over and turned into something that works exclusively on behalf of the revolution. He wasn't being hypocritical when he talked about the courts.
Yeah, we don't want kangaroo courts and trumped up charges. That's what happens in other places that we used to scold for doing that. We want our court system and our Justice Department and our prosecutors to be, and our FBI to be, just playing things straight and looking at the facts and not meddling in politics the way we've seen lately.
Of course, you can scream and yell, but wait a minute, that's the guy who brought in the FBI and CIA and apparently turned them loose against Donald Trump, the incoming president, ran an operation, it was Barack Obama's operation, he's the one who did all that, but for communists. That's what you're supposed to do. The FBI is supposed to arrest Republicans and protect Democrats in the mind of a communist. That's what they're supposed to do. If they're not doing that, they're failing. Everything has to work on behalf of the revolution at all times. Enemies of the revolution must be crushed. They cannot be tolerated. Everything, even neutral things, must be taken over or destroyed if they're not working on behalf of the revolution. And speaking of which, let's talk about the administrative state. This is something we talk about a lot on the show. We talked to Ned Ryan about it last night on the show. All these federal employees, all these bureaucrats with all this power, huge budgets, millions, billions of your dollars, and then all this regulatory authority. And we're not even talking about the Central Intelligence Agency, the power at their hands. The FBI, these are institutions with the power to destroy your life if they so choose. Doesn't even have to be legit. They can destroy your life. So what was the thinking when the communists started installing their minions and promoting their minions all throughout these organizations? The thinking always is, if the voters reject us, we have to have a way to get around that. This is all the way back to the Soviet Union when the Bolsheviks took over and they told the people, no, you can have a vote. Then they basically put it up for the vote and the communists got like 25% of the vote. The people were like, hey, we don't like you at all. And then the Bolsheviks said, you know what? Never mind about that whole voting thing. They know they like to appear to give you a choice, but they don't want you to actually have a choice. That's why you fill up the administrative state with committed communists. So when the people reject you, go out, vote for Donald Trump again, you are not left out hanging. You still have all these subversive revolutionaries inside the government. Barack Obama was calling to them yesterday.
Right now, there's just a little discomfort. And so when I say, for example, if you're a law firm, you know, you saying to, you know, we're going to represent who we want, and we're going to stand up for what we think is our core mission of upholding the law. And maybe we'll lose some business for that, but that's what we believe. That's what's needed. You know, if you're a university president, say, well, you know what? This will hurt if we lose some grant money from the federal government, but that's what endowments are for. Let's see if we can ride this out, because what we're not going to do is compromise our basic academic independence. If you're a business, you say, you know what, you know, we think it's important because of what this country is to hire people from different backgrounds, and we're not going to be bullied into saying that we can only, you know, hire people or promote people based on some criteria that's been cooked up by Steve Miller.
Yeah.
You know, we all have this capacity, I think, to take a stand.
You hear what he's saying? He basically laid out exactly what I told you in the beginning. The communist drives through your town, sees the police department, Chick-fil-A, hospital, a university, and all he sees are tools or potential tools for the revolution. It is a truly sick, demonic religion of destruction and domination, and Barack Obama was the one who laid the foundation for the struggles we have today. Dirtball. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about some things, some ICE things, some other things. Before we talk about those other things, I want to talk to you about your energy level. How do you feel? Not in the morning, although that affects it too. How do you feel at night? When you get home from work, are you done? Totally gassed? Don't feel like lifting a finger? Let's order in! Or do you feel good? Ready to go? Good mood? A vitality stack from Chalk, whether you're a man or a woman, they have male vitality stacks and female vitality stacks. A male vitality stack or female vitality stack from Chalk is going to change your life. It is life-changing. You'll be better at work. You'll be better at home, your personal life, recreation. Everything's better when you feel better. Go to chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, let's talk about what's happening. We're going to talk about ICE, but this is really about the blue areas of the country and how they may just be lost. That we have to acknowledge something before we go into this, before we go into the bounties and the cartels, Los Angeles, things like that, that there are places in America that are now foreign countries. Maybe we can bring them back into America. Maybe we can't, but if you are in a completely blue area, it's a foreign country now. It's foreign, it's communist, it's hostile to everything good, it celebrates everything bad. It's not the United States of America anymore, and illegals even know that. Why do you think they all flock there? Which, of course, brings us to the Trump administration. It brings us to ICE. You know, people want to know, why is Donald Trump going into Chicago? Why is he going into New York, Houston, where I live? Why is he going into Los Angeles? He's going into these big urban blue hellholes, because that's where the worst of the worst of the illegals, that's where they congregate, and that's where you're going to get the most of them, because these are foreign countries who tell illegals, come on in, you're welcome here, you won't get in trouble, shoot, we'll pay you to be here. So if you have promised the American people that you're going to try to deport all these savages we've brought into the country, you have to go to where they are, and they're in Los Angeles. And here's how that's going.
LA County has declared a state of emergency over the immigration raids. The Board of Supervisors voted today. Board members say the raids are preventing people from going to work and forcing some businesses to close. The emergency allows the board to look at enacting an eviction moratorium and other protections for people impacted by the raids. And this news just coming into our newsroom, will, of course, continue to follow it.
Just before we talk about anything else, just wrap your mind around that. ICE is going in there, arresting people here illegally and deporting them. That's it. And in every blue area in the United States of America, the Democrat politicians in that area are doing everything they can to stop them. The street animals, as you can see right there on the screen, are doing everything they can to stop them. That's a hostile foreign country. And speaking of hostile foreign countries, according to Kristi Noem, Mexican drug cartels are now placing bounties on the heads of ICE agents. You get so much if you kill one. You get so much if you take one alive. And they're working with these street animal groups like Antifa to get it done. America's radical left, they've joined forces with the drug cartels to kill ICE agents. That's quite a lot to take in. And now let's talk about the future. All these brave ICE agents and people signing up for ICE because the Trump administration is recruiting more. They need way more if you want to get to the deportation numbers you want. What's going to happen to you if you're an ICE agent? And let's say 2028, 2032, Governor Pritzker gets elected president.
The tables will turn someday. These people should recognize that maybe they're not going to get prosecuted today, although we're looking at doing that, but they may get prosecuted after the Trump administration for the things that they did because the statute of limitations won't have run.
Wrap your mind around where we are as a country. I know that's, look, it's a lot to take in, but when you really sit back and think about it, we have America's Democrat politicians, every one of them, working with America's street communists, working with the Mexican drug cartels to protect rapists and murderers from being deported while also putting bounties on the heads of those ICE agents while also promising future prosecutions for ICE agents who arrest and deport illegals. Now, let me say again, we have places in the United States of America that are no longer the United States of America. And this is where I get to the ugly part because I hate saying this. I'd like to, you know, bring a solution if you're going to bring a problem. I don't know what we do about that. I don't even know if there's a historical precedent for having a country and then having a bunch of hostile city-states, essentially, inside of the country that actively work against the country. I'm not sure how to work that out, but I know, look, even if we get J.D. Vance for 8 years or whoever, even if we hold the White House, hold the House, hold the Senate, that's not going to save Chicago, L.A., New York. I don't know where we go from here. It's ugly. Now, let's talk about the government going after United States senators. Senator Ron Johnson is going to join us in a moment, and we'll discuss that. Before we get to Senator Ron Johnson, I want to talk about something I love. Tallow. I have fallen in love with cooking with tallow. Do you know, let me give you a little tidbit here, once you go to golden age fats and you get yourself some tallow and you stop cooking with vegetable oil and canola oil and all that filth, let me give you a little Jesse Kelly white trash tidbit. Make your grilled cheese sandwiches with it. We did that last night. Grilled cheese sandwiches. Drop that tallow in there. Guilt-free. We're talking vegetable oil here. Drop that tallow in there. Toast. Oh, it's so good. And you don't have to feel bad about it. How about that? GoldenAgeFats.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
The people on my special counsel team were like that. The idea that politics played a role in who worked on that case or who got chosen is ludicrous. And Andrew, you know, and this is another thing that I think if you're not inside the U.S. Department of Justice, the idea that politics would play a role in big cases like this, it's absolutely ludicrous. And it's totally contrary to my experience as a prosecutor.
Yeah. Politics didn't play a role. I'm sure Senator Johnson will acknowledge that. Joining me now, Senator from the state of Wisconsin, Senator Ron Johnson. Senator, you don't think politics played a role, right?
Now, Jack Smith can continue to claim that time and time again. It's just a false claim. You know, politics was obviously behind, you know, the decade-long attack on President Trump. The fact that President Biden basically declared half America potential domestic terrorists, the SWAT raids on pro-life individuals, people who just attended the January 6th rally, whatever you want to call that. It wasn't, you know, most people didn't participate in the riots. They just came in and listened to the president. So again, now this has been a concerted effort. It's 100% partisan. What else could it be? How many other Democrats did they have their phone records snatched up by Jack Smith's prosecutors?
What was Arctic Frost? What was the reasoning behind all this? It obviously wasn't what they were selling us. They had some kind of a plan. What was it?
Well, again, I think they wanted to criminalize what happened on January 6th. Not the, you know, obviously any kind of violence was a criminal act, and those people got convicted and punished. But they wanted to criminalize, for example, the alternate slate of electors that was produced in Wisconsin. Really following the precedent of John Kennedy in Hawaii in 1960, really following and correcting the mistake of Al Gore, who, if he would have had an alternate slate of electors, might have prevailed in the Supreme Court. But because there was no alternate slate of electors, there was no way other than, you know, no way for the Supreme Court to rule other than to award the presidency to George Bush. So, you know, Judge Troupas in Wisconsin learned that, did the right thing legally. Our Wisconsin Attorney General actually said there was nothing wrong with it. And then 2 years later, he's trying to put Judge Troupas in jail, destroying him financially. I think his legal bills are already $1 million. So it's all about that lawfare. It's all about criminalizing what I thought was legitimate legal posturing and legal moves, just in case President Trump, for example, prevailed in his challenge to the Wisconsin election results, which there were all kinds of problems in Wisconsin 2020.
There were, and you know what, let's pause for a moment and check in on that, because as you well know, your home state is always critical in national elections. Are those problems being cleaned up?
And to a certain extent, unfortunately, we still have Central Cotton, Milwaukee. It's not a particularly transparent process. But we had something like 170,000 ballots cured by the clerk of courts in Milwaukee in 2020. They're not allowed to do that. You know, we had the permanently confined voters that went from, you know, a few tens of thousands to many more tens of thousands. We had nursing homes, people voting for folks in nursing homes. We had balloting in the park, which is not allowed by Wisconsin state law in Madison. So again, there were four or five different valid issues that need to be challenged. In the end, it was just throwing out cloak of latches, you know, some kind of legal concept. I don't even quite understand it. But again, the evidence wasn't seen. It was just thrown out on, you know, from my standpoint, a pretty weak legal argument that, again, courts just simply did not want to review the result of that election because President Biden was already elected president at that point in time. So they don't want to go back. And that's always been the problem with proving fraud in elections. The time scales requirements proceed so quickly, the losing candidate generally doesn't have the money to challenge it. And so fraud generally goes unchallenged and unpunished.
That's a problem. Senator, let's circle back to this January 6th committee, the congressional investigation. According to Just the News, the congressional investigators collected 30 million lines of phone data as part of this committee. Now, there weren't 30 million people there by any stretch of the imagination. What were they doing?
I don't know. I saw that exact same report by John Solomon, excellent investigative reporter. That's what we need to get to the bottom. I mean, we all know the January 6th committee was just a sham. It did not follow the rules of the House. It didn't have appropriately appointed minority members. This was just one great big sham committee that was designed for one purpose. And again, that was to basically convict President Trump and, quite honestly, anybody associated with him. So they're just gathering whatever evidence they could to, again, criminalize what was legitimate concerns over all the problems with a COVID election where we doubled the number of absentee ballots, which Jimmy Carter and James Baker said represented probably the greatest threat in terms of electric integrity, and yet we doubled absentee ballots. Said, oh, there's nothing to see here. No, there was all kinds of things to see there, but they want to criminalize just investigating that.
Jasmine Crockett, not exactly your intellectual equal, is out there talking about the CR, saying things like this.
Basically, the last information that I got is that once the Senate passed what we pass out of the House, and I shouldn't say we, what they pass out of the House, then we would come back. I think it's a terrible, terrible idea. It's a terrible plan.
What's going on with the CR?
Well, we just vote again. Don't have the results, but I'm sure the Democrats are going to, again, vote against just funding the government at Biden's levels for another, you know, till right before Thanksgiving. I mean, these are Joe Biden's spending levels. This is a clean, continuing resolution, which Democrats, when they were in the majority, passed time and time and time and time again. They had no problem with that. All of a sudden now, they're shutting down the government. They're holding people hostage because they're demanding $1.5 trillion in additional spending, some of it for health care for illegals, some of it for the extended, enhanced, temporary COVID subsidies that have fueled tens of billions of dollars of fraud. Again, but they're arrogant. They believe that, and they do have the legacy media in their back pocket, which is why the American public is so evenly split in terms of who they're blaming for this. But again, they're just being arrogant and confident, and they're digging their heels in.
Where are we at as far as our resolve goes? I know there's been a couple flimsy senators on our side, as per usual, but are we going to get caving and giving in on our side? Because if not, to hear you say it, sounds like this thing's going to go on a while. That's what you said in the beginning anyway.
I don't believe so. I mean, we just came from lunch. We do have things in place. I mean, I've offered the Eliminate Shutdowns Act, which would eliminate shutdowns for all time. I'd love to see that passed. I've got a Shutdowns Fairness Act, which would just pay anybody we're forcing to work. That's only fair. Nobody really wants to bring that up right now because they don't want to be the first ones to blink. So that's fine. So again, I was really heartened to see a Majority Leader Scalise come out strongly against extending those enhanced premiums. Sure sounds like Leader Thune gave a real good argument of why that shouldn't happen. So at least from a leadership standpoint, unless President Trump indicates otherwise, our leadership is just saying, no, we will pay the troops just past the clean CR. And that's pretty much our position. I don't have a problem with that. Seems like a pretty solid position to me.
All right. We dumped 4,000 government workers. That's, a very, very small start. Is this going to continue? I know the threats have been coming from the White House. Hey, we're going to fire more. We're going to fire more. But we haven't seen mass firings yet. Is that going to start?
Well, that'll be up to Russ Vought and President Trump. From my standpoint, the primary problem in this country, literally, is the size, scope, and cost of government. So anything we can do to reduce the size, scope, cost of government and its influence in our lives. As government grows, our freedoms necessarily recede. I don't see too many things the government solving other than, you know, it just exacerbates the problems. It's further mortgaging our kids' future. So I am all for anything that would, shrink the size, scope, and cost of government.
An inconvenient study. Tracy Benz came on our show a couple weeks ago and was talking about an inconvenient study. And it was stuff I'd never heard before in my life. You've watched this. What do you think?
I think it's an excellent job. Del Bigtree really lays out the case. It's, again, like Vaxxed, it's a difficult movie to watch, quite honestly, particularly early on when they're going through these examples of parents. I mean, one set of parents had triplets, three beautiful little babies, I think two boys and one girl, and they got them all vaxxed the same day, and they lost them pretty much the same day. They stopped talking, They stopped helping. Now they have their six-year-old daughter they're talking about still in diapers, not potty trained. I mean, it's horrific to hear these stories. And the fact that the legacy media, the medical establishment, our federal health agencies haven't listened to the parents who now for decades have been saying that my child was normal until they got a vaccine and I lost my child. That's what Dr. Andrew Wakefield, that's all he did back in the early 1900s. I think it was 1990 or whatever, when he just was listening to parents, did a study, never said that MMR caused autism. He said we ought to look at it, and they had to destroy him for just basically listening to parents, and we've been ignoring parents ever since. It's time for that to end. So this is an excellent documentary. I urge all of your listeners to watch An Inconvenient Study.
It's quite an endorsement. Thank you, Senator. Appreciate you. Is Tish James going to prison? What happened in the Supreme Court today? I don't know. We're going to ask Bill Jacobson about that in a moment. Before we talk to Bill, I want to talk to you about something that's It means a lot to me. It's near and dear to my heart. Chips. I'm a chip man. You know, if you've been watching I'm Right for any length of time, you understand that I'm a chip man. When I snack, it's chips. If I go to the pantry and I'm in any kind of a snacky mood, I'm immediately hunting what kind of chips. Now, that's generally bad because chips today, I mean, what you buy in the grocery store and the gas station, those are terrible for you. But now I can do it guilt-free because we have massive chips stacked up in our pantry. Just three ingredients. None of this ugliness. Just three ingredients. None of this cancer-causing filth. None of this stuff that makes you feel bloated and disgusting. Just good quality ingredients you can eat guilt-free. MassaChips.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Well, the Supreme Court's meeting, and that's actually been going pretty well for us lately, so I don't cringe and wince when I say that, but there were oral arguments today, all kinds of things going on, and so we probably should bring in the professor to make us smarter about the whole thing. Joining me now, Bill Jacobson, Cornell University Law Professor, founder of the wonderful Legal Insurrection. Okay, Bill, what's this Louisiana case all about?
Well, Louisiana has to do with whether the courts and legislatures need to create majority-minority districts in congressional redistricting. And essentially it means, do you have to create districts that preserve a certain number of majority black voters that are likely to empower and elect blacks? And believe it or not, that actually has been the law under the Voting Rights Act, or at least as it's been interpreted, but that's now up for play. And so the justices are going to have to decide, does it violate the equal protection provisions of the Constitution, and does it violate the voting rights protections in the Constitution to have a legislature, the Congress, pass a law which is interpreted as requiring that you create racially gerrymandered districts. And that's what it is. It's a very complicated history to this case, but where we are now is that there is an extra black, so-called black congressional district was created by court order in Louisiana. Another court, a three-judge panel, put the hold on that, found that unconstitutional. The Supreme Court stayed it. So now here we are. Are we going to create black-only districts in order to achieve a certain number of black congressmen? Or are we going to say that race doesn't matter, you can't do that? And that's really the question. So it's a huge question. And really why it matters to Democrats is not because they want more black congressmen, it's they're going to be Democrat districts. So you could have, and I've seen various estimates, 3 to 5 seats in play if the Supreme Court does away with this rule.
So we've been handing 3 to 5 seats to the Democrats just for some blatantly unconstitutional and frankly racist interpretation of a law that's bonkers. How long has this been going on, Bill?
I don't know when the Voting Rights Act was enacted, but at least several decades.
Good grief. Okay, so today was oral arguments. Did they make a decision by dinner time? How's it work from here?
No. Hopefully we get it long before June. Typically, the very big cases, they wait till the end of the term. And we've discussed what that means. That's simply when the court has cases docketed, and that ends in June. So the really big cases, they usually hold to the last couple of days in June. The problem here is that there are deadlines to get these districts redistricted by the time of the 2026 congressional election. So I think we're going to get a decision this calendar year. I don't know what the deadline is for voting in Louisiana, but presumably if they got this redistricted this calendar year, or at least a decision this calendar year, they could get it done in time for the next election. If they sit on this till June, then nothing can really change by November. There just won't be enough time to have primaries and things like that. So I think we'll get a quick decision, not tonight, but I think before the end of this calendar year.
All right. Let's shift gears to something else here. Letitia James, it looks to me, from the complete idiot layman's point of view, that this is about as black and white of a case as it is. I may be a layman, but I have bought and sold a few houses in my various moves across the country, and it's not a small section of it, Bill. It's pretty obvious. Are you declaring that to be your primary residence or not? And if you lie, it's bank fraud. What am I missing on this case?
Yeah, well, I think the allegation is that she said it would be a residence. I don't know if she said it would be her primary residence, but she then immediately rented it out. So it wasn't a residence, primary or secondary. And that's really the issue, that it she got a better rate on a mortgage and probably had an easier time getting a mortgage when it's going to be a residence than a rental property. And that's the issue. And they seem to have a lot of evidence that this was all planned, that she had a renter lined up immediately and essentially defrauded the bank. That's the allegation, by getting a better rate than she would have gotten, which of course is very ironic, because that's what she accused Donald Trump of doing in the New York civil case against him, was inflating his properties to get better deals from banks. Of course, there, nobody was harmed, actually. The banks were very sophisticated players. But so it's so such an irony that the person who weaponized the prosecutorial function against a political enemy and against his family, let's not forget that. She said on the record, she's going for his family also, that she is now indicted for a crime very similar to what she tried to accuse him of doing. Now, his was a civil case, not a criminal case, because she couldn't prosecute him criminally. But what irony is there, that if there's anybody, you know, who, talk about the boomerang, I mean, this is a huge boomerang on Letitia James if she gets convicted. I don't know if a jury will convict her. It's the Eastern District of Virginia, so there may be a little Trump derangement syndrome present on the jury there that'll help her out, so-called jury nullification. But certainly the indictment is pretty damning. But of course, the indictment is just the prosecution's accusations. It doesn't tell you what the defense is.
Okay, so let's talk about this jury nullification thing, because we have Brennan, Comey, we have Tish James, we have Adam Schiff, we have all these people that may have already been accused, or we think they're going to be, of having committed crimes. Where are these trials going to be held? Because you'll have to forgive me, if they're in Northern Virginia, we're screwed.
Yes, they're in Northern Virginia. So that's where they're going to take place. And I'm not sure why it was the Eastern District of Virginia. I said, why didn't they bring these in D.C.? Probably didn't want to be in D.C. of all places, the prosecution. But you probably know Northern Virginia better than I do. But what I know as someone who's not living there is that it's turned very solidly blue, with a lot of government employees, federal government employees. So it would be a very favorable venue for somebody like Letitia James, particularly when it's the Trump administration going after her. We'd like to think juries can rise above that, and hopefully they will. But that's certainly a factor that we have to consider.
Bill, I'm sure you saw Donald Trump is calling for the great reform agenda in higher education. What is this?
Yeah, he released a couple of weeks ago something called the Compact for Higher Education, and he's been posting on Truth Social about it. That's getting a lot more attention than when he issued the 10-page document 2 weeks ago. And basically what it is, it's a carrot and stick approach, that the carrot is, if a school agrees to this compact, which is 10 pages, has a lot of stuff in there, they will get preferential treatment when it comes to government funding. They'll get fast track, they'll get other perks and benefits if they agree to this. And what they're agreeing to is essentially to de-radicalize the university, to move it a little back to the center, not to make it conservative, not to make it MAGA, but just not as crazy left as it's been. Introduce some viewpoint diversity, get rid of the racism in hiring and admission, do all these things. Treat boys as boys and girls as girls based on biology, not thought processes, things like that. But if you don't take it, now comes the stick. And the stick is basically the current situation, which is they are auditing schools, they're reviewing schools, and if they find you in a civil rights violation, like they claim to have found Harvard and several other schools, they're going to start to pull your grants and pull your funding. That's the stick. So giving schools a choice. You can play ball with us. You can agree to things which we know you don't like. We know your faculty is going to hate. And if you do, there'll be a reward. But if you don't, you get stuck in the system you're in now. So that's the choice he's giving them. And I expect most schools will not go along with it.
Bill, how realistic is it to think that you could even attempt a lot of this? I'm glad he's attempting something, but as you mentioned, the faculty, everyone knows personnel is policy. That's one of the oldest sayings in the world because it's true. You can give as many directives as you want to Harvard, but if it's a bunch of Maoists in the teaching department, what good's it going to do?
Well, the way this is structured, if they do accept these reforms, the president of the university is now personally liable if they violate them. So that creates a strong incentive to actually enforce this. And they talk about eliminating various programs and things like that. So I think this will be measurable and enforceable. Of course, the things are always going to be hidden, but they've put things in place there to put key people on the hook if they don't live up to it. And that's a strong incentive. If you're president of a university, you have a strong incentive so that you don't lose your life savings and possibly worse to the federal government. You have a very strong incentive to make sure these rules are followed. That threat is not there right now. The president of the university has no personal incentive to make sure that the rules are followed and the civil rights laws are obeyed. It's the institution that's responsible. So that's huge. So I think there are things in here that would be extremely important. This is the equivalent of an intervention. This is the Trump administration telling academia and higher education that you are on an unsustainable path. You cannot continue to live in this bubble that you've created. You have alienated a significant percentage of the population. Gallup just came out with a poll that said the lowest ever percentage of people think a college degree is important or very important. Academia is a sinking ship, and the Trump administration is actually trying to intervene and rescue it. That's not how academia is going to look at it. They're going to look at it as a gross interference. But this is actually in the long-term interest of higher education to get them off of a destructive path. It's like staging a family intervention with a relative who's out of control. Higher education cannot reform itself. It needs outside intervention.
No one knows better than you. Thank you for everything, as always, Bill. Lighten the mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. RFK Jr.'s wife is Cheryl Hines, and she's out there hawking things right now. And so she got invited for The View, to The View. Invited to be on The View. However you're supposed to say that, it doesn't matter. Remember the communist, he lives in a world of make-believe, and he carefully constructs and maintains this world of make-believe at all times. Now you, it's not a problem, but if you're some middle-aged woman sitting at home watching The View all day, popping Xanax, you live in a world that is not real at all because they lie 24 hours a day. They just lie to you. Now you bring in Cheryl Hines, and she starts tearing apart that world. You got to go to commercial break.
To say, hey, you know, consult your doctor before you take this, I agree with that. And I think that's okay for moms to hear.
Cheryl?
Yeah?
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Now,
all right.
This is not your fight, really, to be fighting. Yeah. This is your husband's fight.
Thank you for acknowledging that, but go ahead.
I just want to say, you know he's not a doctor, and he's not a professional.
Yes.
And oftentimes when he's talking...
And just to be clear, 90% of secretaries of HHS have not been doctors.
But they've had a science
background.
There have
been three.
Yeah.
No, to be honest.
What, one of Obama's secretaries of HHS was an economist.
But
so,
the majority of them that haven't had medical backgrounds have had a science background.
Wait, don't do anything else. Don't say anything else yet.
Because I do want
to have to take a break.
All they do is lie to the poor, dumb souls who watch it. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.